Hello, and welcome to Stories in Harmony. I'm your host, Laura Ferrero. I'm a marketing strategist and storytelling guru who helps artists and entrepreneurs share their most powerful stories. Today's guest is Dina Lynch, an Australian singer-songwriter and artist also known as Jaguar Jones. Dina is truly wise beyond her years. Before pursuing a career in music, she worked as a corporate business analyst, crunching numbers. It took her a lot of work on herself and courage to transcend the expectations that her family placed on her to be the main breadwinner and have a respectable, high-earning corporate job to pursue a career in art. I found her story so inspiring, and I think you will too. We also talked about her most recent album, Bunny Mode, and how it served as a vessel for some of the traumas that she's experienced and getting them out of her body and sharing the stories of it in a way that can really help others. We explore the power of storytelling and how it can inspire others along their own journey. And she gave us some great tips about how to get present and grounded in your own body using some somatic therapy techniques. We discussed this and a whole lot more. I got so much out of our conversation, and I hope you will too. So sit back and enjoy my conversation with Dina Lynch, aka Jaguar Jones. So I'm here with Dina Lynch, who's also known as Jaguar Jones. I'm so excited to talk to you today.
So nice to be here. I'm loving this part of, is this still LA? I don't even know.
It is. Yeah. It's LA County. It's the east side of LA, a few miles east of downtown.
Okay. Yeah. I haven't been to this side of town, so.
Yeah, I'm glad you got to come today. I know that you're here for your first shows in LA, which is really exciting. Have you spent much time in LA before?
Yeah, I used to live in Orange County for a bit, just for, I think, about 8 months. But otherwise, in terms of music stuff, it's my first time being here. I was meant to come here in 2020, but we all know what happened. So this is version 2.0.
Yeah, I think there have been a lot of those stutter step things that were meant to happen and are finally happening, thankfully. So, Dina, I thought maybe we could talk a little bit about your background and your journey to becoming the artist that you are today. And I know that you were once a corporate business analyst, which is I was really surprised because you seem like such a prolific and natural artist. I wouldn't imagine that. So how did that happen? And then how did you make the transition to pursuing your music and your art?
Yeah, I think since I was a child, I'm sure people who come from ethnic families can relate to the pressures that you are, placed upon you to have stability and security and what they deem to be successful. And so since I was a child, it was always discouraged for me to express myself creatively, and that was very much repressed. And so I thought I loved math and science. Everyone wanted me to be a doctor, but I have a terrible blood phobia. So I went into engineering. And I studied engineering, and then I did business marketing and became a business analyst in software development firms. And I thought I was happy because I was climbing that corporate social ladder. I was climbing out of survival. I was being able, I was able to provide for myself. But I soon realized that I've been surviving my whole life, and I was just denying the honesty and transparency with myself. And that was a lot of the trauma and abuse I went through as a child. And I would just put them away in a really, far away dark closet. And that started coming up in my adulthood, and I didn't have the means of communication that I do have now and the support network around me. So I fell into music and art as a way to be able to have conversations with myself and to start unpacking this ball of trauma that was inside me. So, you know, I guess the catalyst for that was that I lost a dear friend of mine, and I didn't know what to do with my grief. And so I randomly bought a guitar from a garage sale when I was walking home one day. And instead of learning how to play the guitar, I just started writing songs. And I realized these were kind of gems of truth that I didn't even have the guts to say to myself, you know, in like a normal conversation in my head. And so I started just writing songs. And from there, I started creating artworks, and I just so fell in love with creating and expressing myself. And in the beginning, they weren't great at all. The artistry definitely takes time, but I fell in love with the process of being able to have that conversation with myself. And then I found passion for the first time in my life. And once you find passion, it's really hard to turn back and go back to what you used to be, you know, what you were, you know, doing before. And so I just made the gutsy call that I love music, I love art, and I don't want to have regrets in my life, and I'm not happy with what I'm doing currently, and I'm going to make the courageous switch. And so I did still do it very strategically, because having come from a very turbulent childhood, I wanted to make sure that security, stability, and safety was my priority. So I worked as a business analyst and started creeping into the music industry and kind of juggling both. And then before I launched myself as an artist, I was working behind the scenes in the music industry to, you know, kind of boot camp myself into what I wanted to do and learn how people were doing it, and never expected anyone to hand it over to me in a silver platter, because that's never happened in my life. So yeah. I knew I had to learn the ins and outs behind all the aspects of music business to then set myself up as Jaguar Jones and launch.
Wow, that's really smart. I know there are some people who just kind of jump in with both feet, and that can work too. But oftentimes, you know, being a little more thoughtful and taking your time and having a bit of a safety net, depending, I think, on your personality type, can be a much better way.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, I was a business analyst, so I came from that background where I was very analytical and very logical. And so I just knew that if I wanted to be a musician, I'm starting a business and I need to understand that business and the roles and make sure that people who do end up on my team are fulfilling their roles and what I wanted them to do within my team. And so I knew that I had to learn that for myself first, instead of just like kind of handing my autonomy and my artistry over to someone and just trust that they'll do what's best for me, because it's extremely competitive. You know, the best driver behind your own project is always going to be yourself. So I had to learn it inside out.
Yeah, that's such a valuable insight, because I know, you know, a lot of musicians and artists think that the music will speak for itself. And in a lot of ways it does, but especially if you're an independent artist, well, actually any artist, you are running a small business essentially, or a large business as you grow. And that isn't the way a lot of artists begin by approaching it. Yeah.
But I understand that too, because I just went about it in a way to mitigate risks, because I was, you know, I didn't have the same privileges that people have around me. And so some people do get to have that privilege of just going head in as an artist, and, you know, people kind of developing a net around them to support their artistry. In truth, what I would love is for all artists to just be able to focus on their artistry and creativity and not have to wear 80 hats to make it in this world. But, you know, they are things that we're still fighting against. And for the time being, I just, like in the beginning, I definitely had to be smart about it.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And in terms of pursuing your music and art, it sounds like a deeper part of yourself was was finding a way to express itself.
Yeah.
And how did, I read that you use your music as kind of a vessel to pour your trauma into.
Yeah. I think because I was just carrying it inside me for so long, I didn't realize that it was kind of eroding me inside out. And when you kind of stay in denial and not process that trauma, it comes out in different ways. The body is quite miraculous in being able to tell you that there are things going on. And so I was struggling with a lot of health issues, which I thought were just because I was unluckily placed in a body that was not as strong as another body. But when I started facing my mental health issues and what I had gone through, and I realized that the body was so sick because it was holding on to that toxicity and that damage. And once I started processing that, my body is the healthiest it's ever been in a long time because I've let it go from outside of my body and placed it into my music or my art, where I kind of consider them to be like vessels, little morsels of my emotions and the chapters of my life. And I don't have to contain it within me, but they're still a part of me. It just is parked somewhere else.
It's wonderful to have that outlet. And you're right. I think the body can tell you things that you might not even want to hear. It's very intuitive and intelligent. And, you know, trauma or anxiety can manifest as chronic pain or illnesses. Yeah. And, you know, I've had my own journey with that and back problems. And I didn't at first realize it seemed very acute and like, you know, a physical thing only. But then I explored some avenues and read some books and realized that it probably also, in fact, certainly was related to a certain amount of worry and anxiety that I was holding on to. And, you know, now that I'm aware of that, it's so much easier to process it.
Yeah.
And for me, it's more, you know, I'll journal or talk to friends or a therapist, but finding a way to get that out is so important.
Yeah. I mean, you heard this in my TED talk. Where I talk about my complex PTSD. And for me, it's been music and art, and I'm slowly dabbling into film and, you know, fashion and other things. But I really encourage people to just express themselves, and it doesn't have to be in the way I've been doing it, but just find anything that you kind of connect to. And you mentioned journaling, and I think that's another way. And you can, even the pottery that you make, which is amazing. Currently drinking sparkling water out of one of your amazing ceramics. I'm gonna sell that.
Appreciate that.
I think that's so important when we kind of like connect with the body and move the body and from that create things. It's such an important process to self-care and self-love, and also allow for these things that are deep within you to come out.
Yeah, that, I don't know. It's, I feel like it's going to come out eventually in one way or another. Sometimes it comes out in much unhealthier forms, like addiction or, you know, well, not that anger is unhealthy, but, you know, relationship trouble, that sort of thing. But to be so self-aware is a wonderful gift, I think. And how initially, you know, how did you find the courage to pursue your art and to talk to your family about that? Or did you, like, how did that look?
No, not at all. I was a huge disappointment when I decided to pursue music and art. And I understand their concerns and why they really wanted to discourage me. I guess you have to understand where I came from and, I guess the lack of privilege and the entitlements and security meant that all hope was placed in me to kind of save the family and give us all that dream that we're working so hard for. And music and art is not part of that because there's so much risk associated with that. You know, I come from like an Asian background. I'm half Taiwanese and I grew up with my Taiwanese mother. I was born in Japan. So those cultural influences come into play as well. And it's so looked down upon to have attention brought to you as an individual, because we're all about community. Yeah. And making the choice to do music and art is quite an individualistic choice. But they've come around to it now. I didn't have the support for the first few years in my career, and they didn't want to come see a show and didn't want to encourage me to let go of everything I worked hard for. But once they understood that this really was my passion, and that their ideas of success still carried through in what I do in my music and art, and that even though I've chosen to be a musician or an artist, I am still community-based. I do a lot of advocacy work and give back a lot to the community. And so they've realized that this is my own journey, and that I've harnessed my own power, and that that power is taking effect. It's just not in the way they envisioned it, and they've accepted it now and are extremely proud of me. But it's a slow journey. I do totally understand where it comes from. And I think some people might not get it, but when you come from nothing, to then choose nothing again, to start from the bottom, is a really difficult choice to have people accept.
Wow. I think it's so courageous and really powerful, and, you know, can, I don't know, serve as a light for others who might be struggling with something similar. And
yeah, I think you do what's best for the community and those around you when you do what's best for yourself. And when you take care of yourself, that comes through later. In because I was always just giving and giving and giving and not giving back to myself, you know, the energy I gave back out to people wasn't the same as the energy I can give back to people now. And that's because I am at peace with myself. And I am more self-aware, and I've accepted things and processed things. And so there's a healthier version around of me floating around now that reaps more good than it did when I was just swallowing and just taking things on and just overextending myself constantly. So I always encourage people to meet their own needs, to listen to their own needs, and then, you know, put others' needs second to that. That's really difficult when you're kind of being raised to be a people pleaser, but I really encourage people to find that path.
Yeah, Dina, I completely agree. And it's certainly not the easiest thing to do a lot of the time. You know, there are a lot of people who are in 9-to-5 jobs that they're really unhappy with, and it's hard to see a way out of that. But there's, you know, part of them that they're suppressing that just like it can come out in other ways of not relating well to people, and your energy not being as high, and you might not even be so aware of it. And that's a pretty common thing in our society, in our capitalist Western society. So it's just so valuable when you can realize what you realized. And I think, you know, you're relatively quite young to have made those realizations, because there are people in their mid and later life who've really struggled with that. So,
yeah. And nothing wrong with a 9-to-5 job, but it's definitely like, if you're not happy, ask yourself why. And I think most people can't answer that. And that's because they're afraid of what the answer of that question is. And it can be so daunting, but the way I see it, and this, I'm very like a visual metaphor person, and that's probably because I'm a visual artist. But when I decided to change the system that I operate within me, maybe this is a bit nerdy, like a business analyst, but I knew that I was like unplugging all the wires out of my mainframe, and the process of rearranging that is chaotic. It's just piles of wire on the floor, and it feels like you made a mistake of diving head deep into, you know, being more honest with yourself. But slowly you're just plugging the wires back into a way better system. And I realized it was so worth going through that. Sometimes I look at it as like, try and just keep taking baby steps forward, trudging along. And eventually you look back and you realize you've climbed a whole lot of mountains. Sometimes it feels so hard to make that change and to like answer that question. to yourself, but there are ways to make microscopic changes that will change how you feel every day and affect the relationships that you have around you for better. So I don't know. It's easy now because I've gone through it and I'm a lot happier. And that being said, I'm still not in a place in my career where it's sustainable and successful and stable and secure. So I'm still in the journey with everyone else, but I just know that I am so much happier. And even with less on the table than I had when I was a business analyst, I am so much more fulfilled and rich in experiences.
Wow. Yeah. You know, I love those analogies, and I have to confess, like, I'm kind of in the part where the wires are being pulled out and you're like, is it all going to come together? Because I worked as a journalist and a more traditional marketing consultant for many years. I was always behind the scenes, kind of being the one to share other people's stories and write about their organizations, but never out, you know, front and center. And now I've been helping artists and entrepreneurs share their stories powerfully on social media and for their audiences, wherever they reach their audience. But it's requiring me to walk the walk and be out there more. And it feels like, you know, because I'm a more soft-spoken and introverted person by nature. So I don't, it's sort of like in your Asian culture, I don't feel comfortable being the center of attention. That's just kind of how I was born. And so doing that feels some days like walking without a net. And it doesn't feel natural. But the more I do it, the more I'm learning from it and gaining and kind of expressing a different part of myself that was suppressed for many years. So it shows, like, at any age, at any stage of life, you might be going through that. And
yeah, definitely. How are you finding it?
Some days I'm really excited by it and feels very natural. Other days I'm like, what am I doing? And this, you know, is this actually working and is this helping anybody? And, you know, so it's definitely like ups and downs. How have you found it?
I mean, it's the same. And it's so good that we're being transparent about it. Some days I just think, what the hell am I doing? Is this ever going to come, you know, to a turning point where I feel safe and secure and I know that I can put food on the table and a roof over my head? Am I connecting with people and, you know, making an impact with my art and music? Sometimes you just don't know. And I think doubt is normal and we should normalize that in conversations. I think it's incredible what you're doing because it's so difficult to break out of a pattern and do something different. And the only way we can grow is to get out of our comfort zones. And what can feel so unnatural in the beginning, you'll do this in like a couple of years' time and go like, I'm ready for TV. I'm ready for something new. And you'll feel like this is such a natural thing. Like, I remember when I first walked out on stage to perform, that felt so unnatural for me. And in my head, I was thinking, you know, I didn't grow up doing music. I didn't perform. You know, that kind of thing is unnatural for me. It's not unnatural. It was just not done before. And so it feels unnatural. And I was so hesitant. I've definitely improved and I was constantly trying to break out of my own inhibitions. But in the beginning, I was so quiet like a mouse and didn't project. And I wanted to hide behind a guitar and cover myself up and I wanted to do a good job and not cause too much attention, just kind of fly by under the radar. That doesn't work when you're trying to be an artist. So it's taken some time to do that. And I think even though we're surrounded so much by stories of success and what you should be and what kind of artist you should, you know, be like or what's popular, ignore all that. You're on your own journey and you set your own path and you define your own success. And I'm just saying that for someone who needs it today, but there are days where I'll need to hear this back and we just kind of ping pong that around and have a more healthy, transparent, honest environment.
Yeah, I love that you said we should normalize the doubt and be transparent about the ups and downs of it all. And it does tend to be what media largely focuses on, is like the seemingly overnight success stories. Yeah. When you look under the hood, they're almost never overnight.
No. Don't they always say it takes 10 years to be an overnight success or something? Yeah, definitely. But what, like, and I just ask why, you know, like, why do we want, and I feel that pressure as a musician too. There's always this pressure to have this certain perception of glamour and glitz that's just not true. And it's toxic as well, because we're fooling ourselves, and we're also feeding and kind of influencing other people that that is what is, you know, I don't know, the thing you want to attain. And
And social media certainly doesn't help with that most of the time. I mean, there are people who seem to be more transparent and honest, but a lot of times it's somebody's highlight reel or the image that they're trying to project. And if we're consuming that a lot, we can feel less than, you know, trying to live up to that, or even internalizing it subconsciously.
Yeah, there are days where I want to just unplug social media and die in a hole, really. You know, like, it's so true though. Like, it's just so toxic, and being an independent artist, you have so much pressure to be your social media marketing manager, your content creator, you know, of your video producer, like everything, your editor and everything. And it's just so full on. And then you see people just constantly pumping content out, and it's a manufactured, curated version of themselves. And it's so hard to know what's reality and what's curated. And so there are days where I have to draw a big boundary on social media.
It's understandable. It can be used for good, and then it can be so draining and toxic. And I guess one of the things that I do working with artists is to find that, you know, it does still involve putting yourself out there, maybe more than is comfortable or convenient, but to really tap into the authentic part of who they are, their real stories, to share what they truly love and why they do what they do, to connect on a deeper level than, you know, have a new single out today, which is also important, but to go deeper than that, I think, is what attracts your people to you and helps you find the right audience, not just any audience who will stick with you through thick and thin. And you know,
it's about building a long-term career, right? So you want people to feel connected to you and your journey, and not just because you had the hype single one time and then they bounce off after that. But it's really hard to just constantly have to put yourself out there and give pieces of yourself out there and not have it returned in the same way. Right. And we see that a lot after the pandemic, where, you know, arts and culture were like the last priority of needs in terms of like essential workers and looking after our artists when the gig economy shut down, or, you know, their means of income wasn't the same anymore. But then at the same time, everyone looked towards arts and culture as a way to connect during the pandemic. And so we were like live streaming all the time and, you know, giving content away out for free, using music to, you know, make people, console people. And so there's this weird culture now where people expect the arts for free. And so now we have to do so much to maintain relevancy and momentum, and it's exhausting. And so I'm in this weird position of like, what other jobs require so much from one person and not have it acknowledged? And so I do think it's extremely important that we're looking after our mental health as artists, as public people who are expected to just constantly give pieces of yourself away.
Yeah, that is hugely important. And I love how it's being more normalized. You know, 20 years ago, saying that you needed help with your mental health or that you saw a therapist was kind of taboo. And I really do love that it's, you know, people can be much more honest and open about that. You know, it was apparently in one of the books that I read, you know, we were talking about our body being able to tell when something is wrong mentally or emotionally with us and then expressing it. And one of the things is that, you know, back pain, for example, was more socially acceptable than emotionally expressing yourself. So that's why the body is a protection mechanism to prevent you from expressing these like socially unacceptable emotions, can internalize it as, you know, gastrointestinal issues or headaches or back pain, you know, things like that. And it makes a lot of sense that, you know, our bodies are so intelligent and work in ways that are mysterious to us.
Yeah. No, it is amazing. I mean, I've already kind of mentioned that I have complex PTSD and I was in therapy for complex PTSD, but I was bouncing around psychologists because I wasn't kind of progressing in the way that I wanted. What I ended up landing on was somatic therapy, which is therapy in terms with your like body, and using the body to kind of dismantle a lot of the trauma that's contained within it. And oh my gosh, the like healing process after I went through somatic therapy with my PTSD was incredible. And that was bringing the body into my therapy sessions as well, which, you know, in the beginning felt a bit airy fairy to me because it wasn't as like commonly known then, but it was so obvious once I started getting into it that this was working for me, and I had to undo, I guess, the social stigmas of my own mental health that society kind of said is not the way, and just kind of embrace this therapeutic process that was, I don't know, I'm so much more in touch with my body now and have developed a way better body awareness than I did before. Didn't even have one before.
Wow. Can you talk about what somatic therapy is like?
Yeah. So I guess, you know, when you have PTSD, there's a lot of symptoms. But one of the major ones is dissociation. And I'm going to flag, I'm not a psychologist, by the way. I'm speaking as like someone who went through that, and I am no way professional, and I definitely wouldn't quote me on things, but for my PTSD, because I suffered a lot of child abuse, my survival mechanism that I developed as a child is to dissociate and kind of just like vacate the body as the body was suffering. And, you know, the body would just take on the trauma, but my brain wouldn't so much. And that was a way of survival. And that's one of the survival mechanisms, but to discuss with somatic therapy, I didn't realize that I would carry that survival mechanism into my adulthood because it was a programmed way of survival for so long. I needed to learn that I didn't need that survival mechanism anymore because the circumstances are extremely different to when I was a child. When you're a child, you don't have the same autonomy and power and ability to change circumstances as you do as an adult. So I had to realize that it's different now. And that was extremely difficult because before I could just even say that to myself, my brain would tap out of my body and dissociate. And so some of the somatic therapy, I guess, what do you call them? I don't know, activities? I'm not sure.
Modalities
or something. One of the ones that I thought in the beginning was almost hilarious was I was told to just kind of like tap on parts of my body, and starting just from the tip of your finger, just tap and say, this is my forefinger. This is my forefinger. And it kind of sounds like I was like, this is hilarious. And I was just like, but I'm committed. And because at that time I was suffering an anxiety attack and I was riddled in fear, and my, you know, my brain has left and it's kind of just looking down on my body, that kind of feeling. And so I just started being like, this is my forefinger, this is my forefinger. And then I'm like, this is my knuckle. And you keep going until you're tapping yourself back into the presence of like your body and what's happening in the now. And I remember just like going from laughter at this is my forefinger to like getting to my shoulder, like this is my shoulder. And my brain had kind of come back into my body and allowed it to feel what was going on in the body. And I just broke down crying, and so much grief came up from everything that I've kind of just held on to. And it just came spilling out in tears. And I was like, whoa, I just invited my brain to come back into my body and feel everything. So that's one example of like, I guess, like a somatic, again, I don't know what to call it, activity.
Yeah. Wow. It sounds very simple and so powerful. That's really interesting.
Yeah, it is really interesting. There are different things too, like because my response was flight or freeze. So like freeze is just kind of like I would go mute for hours and just be in a tiny ball, and I'd find some safe corner in the shadows. So like another kind of somatic therapy activity, sorry, not a professional, was like instead of going into that flight and freeze mode, which is very like an example of what happens with animals in the wild, I would behave like a lion or a tiger. There's a great book called Waking Up the Tiger. And it talks about how, like, I guess humans develop survival strategies very similar to animals in the wild. And I called my debut album Bunny Mode because I didn't know all this, but I called my freeze and flight modes bunny mode as a way for me to understand what I was like kind of going through. And that is, you're a bunny in the wild and you're at the bottom of the food chain, and how they react in the wild is they would freeze and play dead. And that's what I was doing as well. Sorry. And so when I read this book, I was like, oh my gosh, I totally understand this and I fully relate to this. And it feels ridiculous, but they ask you to like growl, like put your claws out and just be like, and like, and push against walls and have that energy of being like a fighter, a tiger. And slowly your body kind of like shifts and goes, oh, you want to fight instead of like freezing. And there's like this kind of weird fiery burn energy that takes over. And you kind of come to. You don't start becoming like a tiger, but you go, oh, I got out of my freeze mode. I got out of my bunny mode. That was incredible. And all it took was me acting like a tiger. Sounds silly, but for those who, you know, kind of go through those moments of feeling like a fawn or a prey, try it. Try it in the comfort of your own space, because it worked incredibly for me.
Wow, that's interesting. It's an kind of I don't know what to call it, like an answer to identifying your bunny, and you see that your bunny mode, and then there's a way to help yourself come out of it. Because what I've done recently, it's funny you mentioned this, is I have a lizard mode, and lizard is like the kind of very simplistic brain of like wanting to feel protected and safe, and and then that's what I call it when those fears come up of, oh my gosh, if you do this untraditional career path, you're going to be broke and homeless and end up a bag lady, you know, and you know those thoughts that sometimes creep in the early morning hours right after I wake up. And then I named my lizard Coco.
So oh, that's like, awesome.
Okay, Coco, you can go back to sleep now. You're not needed. And, you know, I'm very compassionate with it when I'm, you know, when I'm able to be, and just kind of realize that's what it is. It's part of the natural human condition.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's unique to me or you. Yeah. And so to be able to identify it as that, but I hadn't tried acting as a more powerful animal.
I mean, we see that sometimes, right? And like, it makes sense. Like, think about like footballers when they're about to go in the field and they're like, ha, ha, like, let's go, you know? Like, what are they doing? They're like kind of G-ing themselves up for battle or something. It kind of makes sense that when we're at the bottom of our worst, like to kind of take on that energy. You know, when people have like their whole like mirror talk prep talks, like where they're like spitting in the mirror and they're like, this is you, like you can do this. Yeah, don't let it defeat you. You are tall, that kind of thing. I feel like it's like that, you know, you're kind of shifting that energy to go like, I am going from bunny mode into tiger mode. And you just have to do something extremely dramatic to wake that up. Yeah.
Yeah. And so do you, because I want to try this, you're just like growling and do you do physical actions that you think a tiger would?
Yeah, sometimes it's so hard to do it. I understand that.
You feel so, a little silly. Yeah.
So one of the things I do is like find a brick wall or like a stable wall and just kind of like lean against it and push it. Like you're, you know, putting your force on it. So you don't have to start, you know, running around the house like grr, grr, grr. You can also just have the energy and transfer that energy over, and you do feel it. I've had, you know, people that I trust where I ask them to just put their hands up for me and give me some resistance, and I just push against that. Not aggressively, but it's just to transfer that energy and wake that body up to go, you need to give out some energy now and wake up from the bunny mode. Don't crumble. You are strong. And it's worked for me.
Wow. That's, I'm definitely going to try that.
Yeah. You're going to have a lizard mode and you're soon going to have, I don't know, what's your little similar to a tiger?
Could be lioness.
Yes.
Laura the lion.
Laura the lion. Yes. Perfect. So, I look forward to it. I love that. Laura the lizard and Laura the lion. That's so great. Yes.
A lot of alliteration.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's so good. And so bunny mode, your beautiful record. Do you want to talk a little bit about your music? And
yeah, so I released my debut album Bunny Mode in June this year.
Yeah.
It feels surreal that I have put out my debut album, but it was also a very difficult album. We haven't talked about it at all, but I kind of was plunged into this role of being the figurehead of the Me Too movement in the Australian music industry. It wasn't something that I wanted to do or asked for, but it kind of just fell into my lap. And once it fell into my lap, I just knew that I had to do something with it. And at the time when I decided to speak up and cause a stir, I had no platform. I had no privilege. I had no power. I was just an emerging artist, and everyone warned me that I was cannibalizing my own career. But I just knew that if I didn't do my best to make a change in the system that hurt me and so many others that came into my inbox, I would regret being compliant in the system. And just looking the other way. So I just knew that the sacrifice and the risk was worth a lot more than, you know, being in the sidelines and letting the same cycle happen. So it's been 3 years of that advocacy, which has really been brutal. I've had to wear a lot, but I've also been able to push for a lot of change, and I'm so grateful for all the survivors who trusted their stories with me and for me to be able to take that energy into creating, you know, significant change. We just finished commissioned a review into sexual harm, sexual harassment, and bullying, as well as systemic discrimination in the Australian music industry. And that independent review is the first of its kind in an industry in the world, because normally it's done organisationally, and it's quite hard to do that in an industry where it's very fragmented and decentralised. But the results were unsurprisingly shocking. We all know what goes on in the music industry, but to see it in facts and data finally meant that organizations had something to be confronted with and to try and buy in to make a change. That was a lot of work, and it was a lot of work on survivors and I'm exhausted through the advocacy process. But it also meant that I had this burden on my shoulders when I released Bunny Mode. I wanted to make sure that it was an album that represented the journey that I went through on the advocacy, but also respected the vulnerability and sacrifice of survivors that gave me their voice. So it was the hardest music I've ever had to write, where I had to kind of like scrutinize every single word choice and make sure that I was being responsible and respectable and doing it to the best of my ability. So in the beginning, I wrote Bunny Mode as a safe space for people. And then as we went on the advocacy journey, I also found my voice. And I'm a lot more angry and sassy now. And I'm unafraid to be that way. And so this album is this quite like a big breadth of, you know, a safe space for all the survivors, including myself, to relate to, but also communicating our anger and our disgust for the industry and kind of, I guess, you know, it's quite, I don't know, it's very different to anything I've ever done before. And I'm really proud that I put that out. But I am ready for a chapter that is my own entirely as an artist and that I can write without that responsibility and burden, that I can be an artist without having to be fulfilling the holes that are left by the leaders in our industry who are paid to do the work that I've been doing while I've just been volunteering. I'm ready to let that go and have fun as an artist, because that's what I came into the industry to be.
Yeah, I think you're really to be commended for that work. Thanks. And you know, I know that you very bravely shared your story on an Australian public affairs program. Mm. I don't know if you want to mention it or.
Oh, I mean, it's easy to find. I don't know what I can say about it. I am like about to go into a court case. So everything is still quite unresolved still. I guess to kind of fill in the blanks, I spoke out on because I wasn't getting the justice from the justice system, and also from the organizations that enable these perpetrators. I spoke out on, like, you know, an Australian public affairs program about two prolific producers in Australia who sexually assaulted me when I was alone and couldn't take no for an answer and definitely didn't let me say, like, you know, have a choice or, you know, autonomy over my body. I was so different then to what I am now, but I was so scared because they also then threatened my career if I spoke up and messaged me for 6 months to instill that fear in me. I did end up taking it to the police and nothing was done for 2 years until I spoke on the media program. And as soon as I spoke on the media program, a new investigator was assigned to my case, and we're now about to go. Like the court proceedings have started. But we don't all get that privilege of speaking to the media. Yeah. And for it to then make a difference to how your story and case is treated. And when I spoke up, I was the only artist that was willing to speak up because of how corrupt our system is. It protects our gatekeepers, our perpetrators, and blacklists you if you do speak up. So everyone was so scared for me. But I don't know what happened. I just steamrolled my way through.
That's quite amazing. And I right now I believe it's being called anyway, the 5-year anniversary of the Me Too movement. Mm. And believe that Harvey Weinstein is on trial here in LA at the moment. And so, you know, there's a lot happening around that. And it is about sharing your stories, and that's not always easy to do.
The truth is, it's not our responsibility to share those stories to then make a system safer. Like, it just feels so wrong that the people who suffer the most have to then double back and dig into their trauma and relive it to then try and make a change in our system. That just doesn't make sense to me. And the reason why that has to happen is because our leaders have thrived off the corrupt system and don't want it to change because it, you know, they benefit off it. They gain a lot from it. So it requires the people who are at the grassroots to campaign, push, sacrifice, risk, and make noise. So that the momentum builds and we have to finally shift the system. But that is so exhausting. Like, I am so proud of myself that I, you know, stuck to my guns and gave it my all. But people do not see the behind the scenes of how much I had to wear. And not just me, anyone who's had to speak out publicly, how much you have to wear, how much you are a target, how misogynistic and patriarchal our society can be, and being a person of color, how easily it is to be erased when you're a person with colored skin and doesn't fit into the typical mold that people want. So I'm still feeling it now. Like, I am definitely suffering for speaking out. Like, my artistry is suffering for speaking out. And my profile as an advocate has grown a lot more than my profile as an artist, which meant that, like, a lot of platforms are given to me to speak on my advocacy because it's an easy corporate social responsibility ticking box. But I need people to understand that, like, I came into this industry to be an artist, and we should all have safety in our workplaces to work. Like, as simple as that, to be an artist, to work, you know, to even intern or volunteer or to be able to do the things you're passionate about. We should all be able to do that safely and not have to take these like terms and conditions apply as like part of your decision to come into the music industry. So I am really just exhausted.
Yeah, I know, I don't know. It shouldn't be obligatory. You shouldn't have to do that to create change. Absolutely agree. And yet there are some times, depending on who you are, that sharing your story and your truth can be very healing. Mm. But it should be an absolute option and not anything you feel you need to do in order to create the change. And
no, totally.
I don't know if this is at all comforting, and it's on a different issue, but I did a master's thesis on the convergence of music and activism. And I interviewed I think about 30 musicians, including Yoko Ono and Billy Bragg, the British activist troubadour, who's amazing. And they all said that they felt tremendous pressure and backlash. They felt pressure to refrain from being political or speaking out about issues, and then backlash from the industry, their manager, the powers that be, when they did. But look at them now. You know, we have the benefit of being able to flash forward many years. And I mean, it's so much a part of who they are and what makes them so amazing.
Totally.
You know.
Well, I'm driven, like, I still do it because I'm driven by the fact that I wish I had someone who did it for me, you know. And knowing that, if I can do that for someone else who haven't been able to find their voice yet, that's what I'm driven by. I'm not driven by, you know, doing the job for the leaders who are lazy and compliant and are enabling that behavior or a part of that behavior. I'm not driven by that. I'm not driven to give to an industry that takes so much. Not at all. I'm driven by the people who are like me, who are feeling little and don't have their voice yet and need someone to, you know, start carving that path. And the truth is people have been tearing down those walls before. I have been as well, and I'm grateful because we have to just kind of continue this tidal wave of pushing back, and it takes a lot of people to do that. So that's what I'm driven by.
Yeah, I feel like that's a really great and noble motivator, and why I don't know why I think sharing your stories and your truth is so valuable. Oh. Because that I've had it happen in my own life so many times where I've felt, you know, hopeless about a certain situation or really worried about things. And then I hear a story, just even listening to a podcast, you know, hiking the hills behind my house and feeling very alone. And then like hearing someone's story will inspire me or make me feel less alone. And
yeah, so definitely. Valuable. It is so valuable. I mean, in the end, I think it's so important for us to feel connected, and we do that so incredibly well through art and storytelling. And so that's what brought me to music and art in the first place, is to connect. And despite all the turbulence and obstacles I've had to overcome, I have this amazing family around me that I've collected throughout my music and artist journey. And I feel closer to them than I do with some of my friends in real life. And that community that I have around my music is what drives me to do more, to be better, and to be courageous and brave and risk things, because I know that I can fall back into this like soft landing space with my fans and my audience. I honestly have never developed such precious connections. And I wouldn't have been able to do that if I didn't put myself out there and tell stories and create art and have it, you know, reciprocated back to me. So I think storytelling is extremely valuable, and connection is so important, especially after the pandemic when we've been so disconnected. Empathy is, you know, it comes from feeling connected and hearing those stories.
Absolutely. And Tina, what advice would you give to someone who feels insecure about and uncertain about sharing their story?
I would say don't feel like you have to share your story. Not at all, because it's yours and no one is entitled to it. But if you feel ready to, do it in your own way and on your own terms. And feel empowered by the fact that you've decided to share that story. There are stories that I haven't told yet to the world because I'm not ready. Yet I consider myself to be a storyteller through all of my mediums, you know, in my art and music and just straight through words. But I honestly think the best way to tell stories is to do it on your own terms.
Couldn't have said it better.
Yeah. And in terms of the insecurity, there's nothing to be insecure about. I think there are incredible stories to be told in the most tiny things and the big things. And all of it matters. Don't feel insecure. We're not in competition with each other with stories. Every story is valuable and is like a capsule of time and that moment. So go for it.
Absolutely. That's what my work is all about and what I hope to inspire with this show. So thank you for articulating that.
You're doing awesome. And I'm so glad you stepped out of your lizard mode to then be center of attention on your podcast host.
Thanks, Tina. Thank you. And where can people find you?
Yeah. So my artist name is Jaguar Jones. Jones is spelled J-O-N-Z-E. But I'm on every streaming platform, and YouTube. You can find the music videos. I'm on the social media, despite sometimes, you know, wanting to tune it out. I'm on Instagram, I'm on Facebook, Twitter, TikTok. But yeah, that's it. And, you know, I don't know when this episode is coming out.
Most likely very soon.
Very soon. If it happens to be while I'm still in LA, then I'm playing two shows in town while I'm here too.
Oh, it might not be that soon.
It won't be that soon. Okay.
That's in a couple of days, I
you
believe.
You just cut that out down.
Sorry. We'll see.
No.
But I wish we could, yeah.
Well, you know, I got announced for South by Southwest today. So I'll be coming back to the US next year. So hopefully be able to play other shows around that too. So I'm excited to come back.
That's great. Have you done South by before?
Well, I was meant to do it in 2020. Oh, yeah. And I came to New York and everything crumbled. So no, it'll be my first.
It's fun.
Yes.
It's okay. A great time.
I'm actually scared.
Oh, I mean, it can be intense for anyone who attends or performs, you know, but I've had some of my favorite memories.
Awesome.
So I think you'll...
I heard the town, like Austin, is awesome as well. I'm looking forward to seeing
it's
that.
It's like a music city. It is regularly, but for South By, it's just every venue, every bar, every restaurant becomes a music venue.
Wow.
It's really fun.
That's awesome. I can't wait.
Yay. So thank you so much, Dina.
Thank you.
What a pleasure.
So nice to chat with you. Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining me for my conversation with Jaguar Jones. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. If you'd like to find out more about the work I do, helping artists, entrepreneurs, and creatives powerfully share their stories and their gifts with the world to magnetize their ideal audience to them, and to gain the tools to be confident and know how to most effectively share those stories, follow me at Laura Ferrero Storyteller on Instagram or visit my website at lauraferrero.co. Also, if you liked what you saw today or what you listened to, please don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe, and even recommend it to a friend. Thank you so much for tuning in.